Coming up on Patriots This Week. It was a washout in Cincy as the Pats fall from the ranks of the unbeaten.
I'm bummed we lost. I think that's all that really matters.
While the defense proved sturdy, the offense was mauled by the Bengals.
You can't kick two field goals and expect to win many games in the NFL.
Winning is what New Orleans has done all season. And guess who's marching into Foxborough?
You know, watching the Saints, they're obviously an explosive team in all three phases of the game.
But one loss is enough for New England.
And no mistakes will be made, and it's our job to not make the same mistake twice.
Now it's time for Patriots This Week.
It was a reversal of fortune in Cincinnati because the defense delivered where the offense disappointed. The Patriots fall from the ranks of the unbeaten. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Patriots This Week. I'm Scott Zolak, and joining me as usual, former tight end Jermaine Wiggins. What up, Wiggy?
What up, Zol?
Former linebacker Matt Chatham. Guys, here we are, first loss of the season. I really don't know where to start. 1 of 12 on third down. Quarterback was not at his best. 2 field goals. They only total 6 points on offense. Minimal trips into the red zone, mistakes after mistakes. Wiggy, start with you. What stood out the most on offense? What was the problem on offense?
I think there was a lot of things that kind of combined to ultimately make them fail on offense. And when you look at some of the things that I felt like, they allowed pressure, so Cincinnati was able to get to them with the 4-man rush. They weren't able to pick up some blitzes. I saw Cincinnati send some blitzes, and there were some free rushers that were able to get to Brady. Offensively, they just couldn't find that guy to get the things going, whether that was the passing game or the running game. And when you can't do that, sometimes you're going to struggle.
Matt, I thought it started at the kickoff. Leon Washington, who I think a lot of people were excited to have back, elects a return at 6 yards deep. He gets hit. He ends up going out with an ankle injury on that play. All of a sudden, your third down back is gone. Now you're down to LeGarrette Blount, basically Brandon Bolden for the rest of the game.
It's a good point. I'm glad you brought up that special teams play. I was anxious to see him. We knew the weather was going to allow the ball to come out. He took it out. It was the right decision. But they had several unblocked people. The guy that they were scheming to double team actually made it through untouched. So when you got too many people free, you're going to get killed. And when you get killed in the first snap of the game with the position group we know was thin, I think it definitely hurt him, especially throughout the game. With, you know, Blount had the fumble. Mm-hmm. Now they don't have another guy to maybe go to. It became thin back there for sure.
Brady really wasn't as sharp as he usually is, 18 to 38. But I think that is more of a product of, we got Amendola back. He had 3 catches at the half, but Tom was kind of off on some things, and I just think it's the injuries that are starting to really creep up and are starting to get bitten by.
Yeah, well, you could see Tom and you could see the frustration of him trying to find that guy to build that rhythm.
But I thought we didn't like that going back to the Jets game, where he showed all the emotion, where this game he kind of –
I think, you know, as somebody who's played in the NFL, it's such an emotional game. At times, that's what happens. So, and you can see that frustration building up, especially when you're a quarterback and you're looking for that guy to lean on. And every quarterback has their security blanket. And when you don't have that guy and you're kind of pressing and feeling like you have to make every throw and every throw has to be perfect, at times that gets frustrating.
Brady sees Amendola, you know, running that bow route to the left. And maybe it's because he hasn't played pitch and catch with him in a game since the Buffalo game, and I don't know if it's about chemistry, but if he hits him in stride, Matt, he walks in. There's your 7.
I disagree with you a little bit on that throw. When I went back and watched it too, because I thought that in the broadcast, but the corner was playing off and sagging. Had he thrown the ball that allowed him to continue on, I think Tom stopped him short because he didn't want him to continue into that pattern. It was the right throw to make, and it makes it be a little back shoulder, and it's hard to continue on. But then we're into the sequence. We've been talking about this a while, sort of the short yardage goal line stuff, and Wiggy, you and I talked about this earlier in the week, the idea that using your tackle in a pass pattern, it's two-sided risk. I mean, are you A, going to complete it, and B, when you come back the next play, you don't have your tackle? And I think the play that came after that was even more interesting to me, where they went to the quick play to Edelman, right? If you actually watch the play, beyond just the fact that ended up being incomplete, about half the offensive line was downfield, 5 yards in the end zone. Yeah. They didn't realize that the check had been made. So I think one of the things we're talking about here is the communication still needs to get better. The total operation is still a little rusty, so that's going to definitely need to improve.
And I would like to see Danny Amendola with a little bit more sense of urgency and awareness know that when you're on the football field and you catch that ball, roll.
We got to move on to the defense, guys, because this defense is playing their tails off. You lose Vince Wilfork, and everybody thought, uh-oh. And I know they had a little bit of issues against the run, but, Matt, defensively, you know, a little bit of 4-3. They came out in some 3-4, 3-4 nickel. What'd you see about the mix and matching up front?
When you have a new nose, basically Villano's playing Vince's spot. And I've been on teams where we didn't have the giant guy there, and you'll still want to run 3-4, but you do movement. Like, they'll actually hit gaps. Pittsburgh does it this way quite a bit. But you hit a gap, and you'll let Spikes play backside. You'll remember one of the very first long runs of the game was like a 13-yarder. They did that. Volano beat his guy, actually took two with him, and Spikes overran the play a little bit, and it was just a walk for the 13. So, again, it's a new wrinkle. I kind of like the wrinkle, but it's something that needs reps. And you could tell that they were good in certain instances and need work in others.
Are you seeing a bend-but-don't-break style of defense where – here we go again. You get inside the red zone. They tighten things up pretty darn good.
Well, yeah, and I think you're seeing that. But you also have to realize that once you get in the red zone, the field shrinks, you know. So offensively, defensively, they know that the field shrinks. They know that the routes are going to be shorter. But you got to give a lot of credit to this defense. I mean, you know, they played against a good Atlanta offense and was able to get the job done. I think they did a good job against Cincinnati. The one area that I'm still a little bit concerned about, and we've seen this 2 weeks in a row, is the tight end position. First, Tony Gonzalez, and then if you take the combination of Gresham and Efert, you put it together, I think it's 8 or 9 catches for 80 yards. So the tight end position, I'd like to see them do more to kind of slow teams down when they have a good tight end.
I thought the thing that was really cool that fans may not have picked up on is they were using Eifert actually in the backfield. Mm-hmm. So he was the fullback. And we saw last week how they made the adjustment to reroute Tony Gonzalez in line, right? Now, if you want to get Eifert free and you don't want him in line, you don't want to beat him up, put him at fullback because he free releases through the middle. And you saw Mayo have a couple reps where it was a little bit tough. He'd run middle reads over the top of him. It's tough to get the jam when they hide him in the backfield. So I think that's the counter move to try to adjust to what New England's doing.
Another week forward, another week progresses. Aqib Talib still advancing his play. A.J. Green only like 60-some yards, held him to 9 targets, only 5 catches. Pretty good. We make it to leave. I mean,
he looking for the checkbook. That's it. What's the checkbook? That's Talib's looking for. Talib's looking for a nice big check to be wrote at the end of the year. You got to give this guy credit. And, you know, I mean, I know Matt's.
But real quick, get past him. I mean, yeah. I think he likes being here and playing
with
this team.
Well, I think the one thing about Talib, and I've said it before, is he plays with such confidence that you see it. And he likes being here. And that's why I think this is a guy that you have to sign, because he likes this system. He knows that, okay, there's a realistic shot for me to be in contention every year, to be playing in these big games, to ultimately play on in the postseason, ultimately play in a championship. So you got to give him a lot of credit.
And then Matt, talk about the fumble real quick with McCourty, helmet on the ball. That situation.
That was great. I mean, and the NFL wouldn't like that, right? You leave with your head. Had he not, the fumble doesn't happen. I think there were a few other errors on the defensive side of the ball, and I don't like to give them too much credit because you saw Dalton scramble for 6. That was a bad play. Talib gave up the 3rd-and-3 for 17 to Green in the red zone that put it on the 1-yard line, and then they walked it in with Ben Jarvis, so he missed on that one. There were a few instances where, yeah, of course they're playing great overall, but they needed stops, and they didn't get them, and you really just have to hit the pitch that's thrown. And if the offense is struggling, they actually did need to play better than they did. I know they played good, but it wasn't good enough.
All right, guys, good stuff on Cincy. We've got to move on because there's a lot of things around the NFL to hit on, including, oh, guess what? Tony Romo puts up a ton of yards but has another epic fell at the end. That and more when Patriots This Week continues.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam, celebrating 75 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Bose, the official sound of the New England Patriots. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
This week's Putnam Player Spotlight is on Jerod Mayo. The 6-year pro out of Tennessee had a team-high 11 tackles, including a sack against the Bengals. The 27-year-old also had a key fumble recovery. Once again, Mayo is leading the team in tackles and ranks 4th overall in the NFL. This week's Player Spotlight is brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence for 75 years.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week here inside the Bob's Discount Furniture Studio. And everybody, I think, guys, saw the 4:15 game on Sunday, Dallas versus Denver. And, of course, we're rooting for Dallas. I don't know why, because we want Denver to lose. But God forbid, Tony Romo, 500 yards, 5 touchdowns. Peyton Manning goes over the 400-yard mark. Another 4 touchdowns for him. But here we are. Dallas has the ball in their hands at the end of that football game. And the quintessential Tony Romo pick. And I said, there's 3 things in life, baby, that you could guarantee: death, taxes, and a Romo pick at the end of the game to fill. Why do we get so enamored with Tony Romo? Do you blame fantasy football at all for the way we root for this guy, or like people like
him? No. It's not the fantasy foot. It's the Romo factor. He makes a great play, but you know, in the fourth quarter, somewhere at some point in time, he's going to throw an interception or he's going to make a dumb decision, and that's basically what Tony Romo is.
You know what though? As I watched it, I totally agree with you, but I think he just got greedy, and I think the 500 yards, all the touchdown passes, and I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, there were times, especially on that pick.
He forced that ball, Matt.
He got greedy. You know what he had? He had a flat route. He had a check down. And let's be honest, Tom's had some of those too, and we watch how well Peyton's played. It's because he takes the check down. And a lot of times it's just taking the easy one, and sometimes that's hard to get that in quarterback
mind. That's because Romo's idol was Brett Favre. It's what it was. And how did Brett Favre play? He makes great plays, but at the end, he's trying to force way too much for the big play.
All right, something else we got to talk about, Hard Knocks. Now, for fans of Hard Knocks, the HBO series, great inside, behind-the-look scenes at teams throughout camp. Now, reportedly, that if no team volunteers to go on to the show, that the NFL can actually go to a team and say, hey, you have to be on Hard Knocks, for the exception of if a team's bad and you have a new coach, you could not elect to be on the show. Or if you've been to the playoffs the two prior years, you could elect not to be on the show. So, Jack, I think we all understand what Bill Belichick is going to do. But eventually, I mean, you look down the road. Say the head coach is in here or the quarterback's here. One day we might see this team on Hard Knocks.
Well, you know what? I'm going to bet you that the NFL is hoping and praying that nobody elects to go so then they can go around the league and pick the team that they want. That's ultimately what it's going to be. The Patriots, you don't have to worry about it because they'll be in the playoffs every year. But I'm going to bet you that's what the NFL wants.
So who's that team that has a similar sort of ethic to how they do things around here that may not make the playoffs? It's really not going to want to be.
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh? Yeah,
Pittsburgh
that's one. That's
that
one.
Pittsburgh can be that team.
The Giants. But then again, they might have a new coach. Yeah.
Real quick here, I got to ask the international man of mystery over there. Also, the NFL this week said there's going to be 3 home games in London next year. Good or bad for the league?
I like the idea of holding concerts over there, which is essentially what this is. One-time events, go for it. Yeah. Do your thing. But I think at the end of the day, if they start thinking that success in that realm means building a team, you're right.
I just like to see Wiggy over there in the morning on Atlanta. On a London trip, and you're getting an
$8.50
soda.
It's too expensive over there. No, it's too expensive over there. I like you. Yeah, maybe you're playing Florida. You ain't gonna pay no taxes. Go to London. Forget about it. What do they use out there anyway? Euros, right?
I don't even know. I was over there last year, so I just assumed whatever.
Is that what
Big Ben clock and all that?
We're not gonna.
All right, guys, good stuff. One game we don't have to worry about being in London, the Patriots-Saints game. We get into that next when Patriots This Week continues. All right, for about 6 weeks now, we've been waiting for the return of Rob Gronkowski. Why? Probably one of the best tight ends in the National Football League, but he's competing with this guy, Jimmy Graham. I want you to stop it right there. Jimmy Graham is right here. Here's the Dolphins. You got one guy here, one guy here, one guy here. So you, in essence, have 3-3. So what's going to happen here? Mass confusion. He's clapping his hands right now, trying to communicate with this guy, and this is what we got right here. Seam route, right down the gut. Drew Brees is too good to be able to move people around. So here we go. A little stack formation right here. Double tight end set. What's going to happen? Watch. Here comes some pressure right here. Brees looks left. Right here. A lot of area in the middle of that football field to put it up. Jimmy Graham, 6'6", looks like a forward on an NBA basketball team. Now stop it right there. Freeze. Let's go right here. Look at the outside leverage. Look at all the room right here. So you got 4 guys over 3, and there's a big hole right here. Brees, all he's got to do, look to the right. Go ahead and roll that tape. Stick it right on Jimmy Graham. Backside touchdown. It's as simple as that. Patriots DBs have their hands full this week. There's your Zoe Show.
The Zoe Show is brought to you by Pepsi, the official soft drink of the New England Patriots.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week here inside the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. The New Orleans Saints guys come to town undefeated, sitting there at 5-0. I don't know if it's Sean Payton being back and just giving them some consistency at the top, whether it's Drew Brees, 12 touchdowns, 4 picks, playing efficiently. I'm going to start with Matt, though. Defensively, this could be the difference for the Saints, meaning it's such an offensive-minded league, offensively-minded team. Now, all of a sudden, you got defense that's hanging in there.
And it's weird, too, and it's my old coach, Rob Ryan, who's down there. Let's remember, he got kicked out of Dallas because of they had a ton of injuries, remember? Yeah. He had like half his crew. They didn't play poorly. He kind of got pigeonholed and he was out. He goes to New Orleans. they've lost six opening day starters, people that they intended to go through camp. There's six gone. Yet they play better. So he's had this sort of infusion of young talent. They drafted a young guy in Vaccaro. They brought in some other talent. But they're getting a lot of production out of unnamed sources, people that they hadn't really intended to have the production with. So hats off to him. And it's going to be weird pressure. I think we can expect that whenever Rob comes to town.
Everything they talk about with them down there is offensively minded. You got Jimmy Graham, obviously probably the best tight end in the National Football League because we haven't seen a big boy here at all this year. Maybe this will be the week. What do you make of Jimmy Graham as a receiving tight end? Because he gets no credit for blocking.
Yeah, because he doesn't.
He doesn't. Block. Okay,
but I think when you look at Jimmy Graham, the one thing that he has is his size. You know, he's a legit probably 6'6", and he was a basketball player, and he can jump. I think that's the one thing about Jimmy Graham that makes him so dangerous, his athletic ability. And yet you'll see him, they'll move him out, and he'll line up as a wide receiver. He'll run slants. He runs a lot of different routes, and you never know where this guy's going to be. Is he going to be next to the tackle? Is he going to be in a wing? Is he going to be out wide? And I think when you look at Sean Payton being back, that's the biggest thing. You got your play caller back, and he knows how to utilize him.
I would imagine that the personnel grouping, he lives outside the box. So it's Marquise Colston. He's their guy. Graham is the other guy, and he's a tough matchup. But then they go to back production. So the other wide receiver really is Graham.
What scares the heck out of me is a guy like Darren Sproles, because I go back to Atlanta week where you're so consumed with, okay, where's Gonzalez? We finally defended Gonzalez differently in the second half. Forget about Sproles out there, and that's where they could kind of dink and dunk you.
Well, and I think that's when you have a guy like Graham, and you have to find where he is. And it's crazy because you have two guys that they're different players, but they're similar as far as coverage-wise, because you really can't put smaller defenders on Jimmy Graham because he outpowers them. And then if you put linebackers, he's bigger. So now you have to figure out, well, what do we do with Sproles? If we put linebackers on him, he's just that much quicker, and he's able to take advantage of that.
How do you get pressure on Breece? Do you continue to push the edge? Because that's a guy who'll sit in the pocket, but he has the ability to make some plays with his legs.
Breece has always had pretty sweet feet. He's not a guy who's going to pull it down and run. I think you make him uncomfortable, but honestly, I kind of think this is another week where it's just play coverage and not give up cheap and easy ones, especially because there's so many vulnerabilities at certain
spots.
But
I think you have to put the pressure has to come, and it's hard to do it because the Patriots, we don't know about Kelly, they lost Vince. With Breece, I think the pressure has to come from the middle because he's a smaller quarterback, and if you look at Breece, he likes to find throwing lanes, you know, and if you don't get that pressure up front in that middle, he can find those throwing lanes if it's just on the outside.
I agree with
you. So I think you have to put people in his lap till he has to slide a little bit and try to figure out where those lanes are.
All right, guys, good stuff. Time for predictions and our game changer for each guy when Patriots This Week continues.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam, celebrating 75 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Bose, the official sound of the New England Patriots. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
I'm Brian Lowe with this week's Fantasy Lowdown. You won't often see a Jaguar in the must-start category, but Justin Blackmon is the pick. The dynamic wideout had some chemistry with Chad Henne last season, and the Jags will be pass-happy against the Broncos. You'll want to sit Tennessee running back Chris Johnson, who's been dreadful of late, and he's at the Seahawks. And Garrett Graham of Houston is a super sleeper. He's been productive anyway, and now Owen Daniels is out.
The Fantasy Lowdown is brought to you by Verizon. Stay connected to your Patriots at home and on the go with Fios Quantum Internet and NFL Mobile from Verizon. That's powerful.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week. Time for predictions and who will be the big game changer this week against the Saints. Matt Chatham, start with you, buddy.
Well, my game changer is Tom Brady. And to be honest, it's not an area we usually go, but he can play better. He can lead this team to victory. There's more than enough weapons out there. You just got to make the plays and be comfortable and trust the protection. It'll happen. I'm going with Patriots 26-20. I think those Saints are a much different team on the road.
All right, Wiggy.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to have to be the oddball here. My prediction is
Shocker.
The Saints 27, Patriots 21. And if I have to go with game changes for the Patriots to win this game, it's got to come from the safety position and the linebackers, because you got Sproles and you got Jimmy Graham, and you got to defend those guys.
I like that. I thought my game changer last week, Rob Gronkowski, he played fantastic out there in Cincinnati, so I'm not going to go on with him this week. He will play, which is going to make Danny Amendola the game changer. I look for he and Brady, and Matt, I'm with you. Brady and Amendola and everything, all the accuracy, it's got to be better this week. Patriots 31, Saints 27, Patriots win by 4. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Patriots This Week. For Matt Chatham, for Jermaine Wiggins, I'm Scott Zolak. Thanks for watching. See you next time on Patriots This Week.